Welcome back to the Montana Minute. I'm your host, Zach Reamer. Today, I'm going to discuss what the readjustment period can be like for service members returning home from deployment in the U.S. military. The question I want to answer here is how to make that readjustment period easier on the service member and his or her family. I want to learn about what makes the readjustment period difficult and what the veteran and their family can do to help ease this transition. To this end, I've invited some expert guests to speak on the issue. My first guest is actually a couple, Delaine and Terry. Both are veterans, and they spoke to me about their firsthand experience of being a family and working through the hardships of returning home after deployment.
Well, I'm Delaine Mackey. I met Terry when I was home in Florida on spring break. I was going to school in New York, and he was stationed there. Yeah.
I'm Terry, and we met in Florida, and we got married shortly after, and Delaine was in the Army and I was in the Air Force, so the Air Force was more sensitive to joint spouse assignment. So I asked her if she could get stationed in Germany, and she could, so she traded somebody orders, and she got to Germany, and then I followed a few months later to Rhein-Main Air Base in Germany. We had 5 kids, and we spent 20 years in the Air Force. And then we've been retired and back in Montana for several years.
Now, I wanted to begin by learning what the experience was like for them and some of the difficulties they experienced when Terry would return home. So you kind of had all of a sudden a house to yourself and 3 kids, 4 kids, 5 kids to take care of.
Yeah. Yeah. And so things would change pretty drastically, I have to say. Dad's the one that, you know, he'd been gone. He missed the kids. He'd want to keep them up late and play with them when he was home. And I would be the one that would be like, oh, it's 7:30. It's time for bed. And, you know, so the kids were very resilient and they did well with that. But it probably would have been easier if we had talked about it more and figured out, let's have some continuity so life isn't totally different when Dad's home and when he's gone.
Because you've kind of got this normal, so to speak,
quote-unquote normal, so we have a normal when I'm home, and then we have a normal that develops that Delaine institutes, and then I come back and change it, everything, you know, and so it's always turmoil, really, in a lot of ways.
So I'm wondering if, like, when you first get home, is there kind of this honeymoon period and everybody's real happy and you're back? And
Depending on how long I was gone, depending on everything, depending on a lot of factors is how long that would last, you know, how committed maybe we were to making it, helping it last and not trying to get back into a routine quickly, but enjoying. But
so you kind of want to savor that moment, that honeymoon period for a little while. But it must be hard, like you were saying. All of a sudden, the rules are different, and everybody wants to stay up late. And
so it's always just turmoil, always constant changes. And
I think when we first got married, I was very type A, very organized, very like it had to be my way. And, you know, that kind of goes out the window. It goes out the window anyway when you have kids, especially when you get. It depends on your kids. You know, some people say with the first one, but definitely by the time we had 3, it was just like chaos, you know, most of the time.
For another perspective, I turned to Megan Lee Moriarty, a social worker at the Vet Center in Missoula, Montana, where she works not only with veteran service members, but also their families.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been working in the field of social work since 2001 and have worked primarily with people affected by trauma. I'm from out east and have a master's degree in social work, clinical social work from Boston College. And I had been working previously for the VA while in Boston and got a job with the VA and have primarily specialized in working with combat veterans who've been affected by combat trauma as well as military sexual trauma. And I also have specialty certifications in marriage and family counseling as well as addiction counseling.
Megan wanted to work with veterans because her family has a history of service. Both of her grandfathers served in World War II, and her father served nearly 20 years in the Navy. She said she wanted to give back because her grandfather struggled with reintegration after serving the entirety of the campaign in the South Pacific. The generational impact that resulted from his trauma affected her family, and it inspired her to work with veterans and improve upon the care that her grandfather had received. She told me that stories like Terry and Delaine's are common.
Yeah, I think you'll hear a lot of partners say, you know, when my loved one was overseas and deploying, I, you know, ran the family. I was in charge of all the different roles that kind of occur within families and, you know, child rearing and finances. And, you know, there's sort of a way to cope with that is the deployment is kind of a system of routine and just kind of getting through that. You know, often there's a lot of different social support networks that get them through, you know, the deployment and that sort of thing. And so that can make it kind of difficult for a returning active duty member to come back into the family system and kind of reestablish their roles. And I think I hear a lot of couples, you know, struggling with that. And then also I think I've heard so many veterans say, you know, I came back and I didn't feel like I could communicate, nor did I want to communicate what had happened on deployment because I didn't want to in some way kind of taint my family. You know, I wanted to protect them and shield them from the experiences that I had and the atrocities that I saw. And so kind of keeping those secrets or keeping that information inward, which is pretty profound information, can really create, I hear this a lot, emotional distance within the couple. And so you'll hear a lot of couples talk about sort of this loss. You know, spouses will talk about this loss of this person who they married or who they were in a relationship with because their spirit is kind of different, their energy is different. And then for a lot of veterans, they're dealing with, you know, the stress of maybe either getting out of the military or maybe preparing for another deployment. And so there's no real opportunity to kind of let your guard down and kind of deal with these issues because you kind of have to be resilient enough to kind of go back and face them again. And so that, again, can be really just a challenge emotionally to compartmentalize everything.
So if you're thinking like I am by now, reintegration is not simple. Not only is the routine of the family interrupted, but the returning service member has been impacted by what they've experienced, and they want to protect their families from that. This came up with Delaine when she was speaking to me about what Terry's first return home was like. So, I mean, you were deployed in a different country, and you were also in a different country. I mean, neither of you are near your other family or support systems necessarily that you can lean on. I imagine that'd be very, very difficult.
I was still in the Army then, though, okay. So I had coworkers, and you know, everybody could watch CNN. We had CNN over there in Germany. We didn't have much else, but we could kind of follow the news. So I had an idea of where he was and what he was doing, and it wasn't a long deployment, and that I think helped. But then he was able to come visit, and he was having nightmares. So that was, you know, it was really our first time even in our home together after being married. And here he's having nightmares in the night. And I didn't know if that was normal for him or not. And I remember not long after that, our son was born. He'd finally come over and was there permanently. I remember we were walking down the street one day and he was pushing the baby in the stroller, and I just said, "What are you thinking about?" He's looking way down the road, like 1,000 yards. And he said, "I was looking at that car and I was thinking what I would do if that car just started speeding towards us." And that was back before they even talked about PTSD or any of that. And so I'm just kind of clueless. And I just thought, wow, men and women are really different, because that never occurred to me, but to even be thinking about what if.
It seems to me that that moment must have been evidence for Delaine of some kind of change in Terry that presented a wall of sorts. But Megan told me that this is normal. Veterans, she said, are a very resilient group, and as a result, want to see how far they can make it on their own dealing with complex trauma from what they've experienced. But Megan also said that the struggle to deal with this in reintegration is actually a good sign.
And, you know, I think we really work on, especially with veterans, destigmatizing this idea that, you know, of having trauma. You know, I always say, it's less concerning to me that you have, you know, you're having this problem with readjustment, because if you didn't, I would be very concerned about you emotionally and as a person, that you saw these atrocities and engaged in war and were unaffected by it. And, you know, and I think that a lot of people are really kind of letting go of that stigma can really help them kind of access services and really open themselves up to receiving support and growth.
And Terry and Delaine agree that this struggle is normal. It's part of the experience.
I think they've normalized it more the last 10 years, 15 years, to make it, hey, it's just part of deployment. It's part of marriage. It's part of your. It's part of you as you go through these experiences. You're going to have challenges and issues, and you're going to have to understand what they are and deal with them, or you know, get some help or whatever. But it's not like the stigma's been taken away. It's almost even cool to say, you know, you've got PTSD or traumatic brain injury or something.
Oh, gee, yeah, like everybody's trying to show off right, their right, scars. Yeah. This is more of a mental one, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I think both of us are just incredibly independent people, and that's not really a good thing. I mean, you need friends, and you need each other. And so whenever you get those crazy moods where you're like, I would be better off on my own, you know, I don't need you. That's just not.
I think it's just good life skills too. You know, we have to, no matter what we go through, we have to remain vulnerable to be really, you know, healthy and happy in our lives.
Right.
So we have to be able to weave through the barriers and the experiences and figure out where we're at. If we're in a combat environment, then we have to be hypervigilant and, you know, and be a certain way. But then when you're home, it's hard to turn that switch off. And I know people, you know, everybody has a hard time with it, but you have to realize that that's when, you know, you have to somehow find a way to come back and open up, be vulnerable, be yourself again.
Yeah,
so. But I think that's the key to life, finding some happiness in your life, some joy. You have to expose that side of yourself and live that side of it.
So as you heard from Terry, just because it's normal doesn't mean that it's easy. Megan will also tell you that it's difficult for families.
We know that, and it's pretty apparent, and there's a fair amount of research that's being done on this through the National Center for PTSD, but that family members with a loved one who has complex trauma really also go through their own kind of secondary traumatization and experience, you know, depression and changes in mood and energy and sort of outlook on life, insomnia, and all these sort of health-related issues that we would see in somebody who's experienced trauma directly. And so it's important to get those individuals in here talking to one another and building that community. And I think we've found that once we've provided that opportunity to build that community, people become more resilient. You know, they realize they're not alone in that. I also see a lot of spouses grieving their loved one, you know, so their loved one is physically back, but just mentally and emotionally have changed. And so, especially with families who maybe knew one another before deployment and now have gone through these various changes through several deployments and possible trauma exposure, that there's a lot of grief. And so I always talk to families about it's not a returning back to how you were, it's going to be something new. And it's going to be sort of this mixture of what was in the past and sort of as we move forward, the strength that you will be developing. And so I think I see families get stuck quite a bit when they keep trying to return to what was before, you know, and I think we, and individuals as well. And I think once people can sort of let that go and develop something new, they do much better in the healing process.
So what is the way forward in that healing process? As Terry will tell you here, it's about getting better after each experience.
As you go through a deployment cycle, then you learn something every time. It's just like anything in marriage, right? So you learn, geez, I didn't really need to maybe have those expectations when I got home right up front, or that wasn't.
Right.
And you know, it's just typical. Communication and commitment are the big two things, I think, you know. And, you know, my biggest impression of this, right where we're at right now, is just to say that having a family and being married in the military is very normal, like any other. But there's having that military commitment and being deployed adds just another wrinkle to the whole thing that makes it even more challenging than staying married, raising kids and all that. But it's very, very much like just normal marriage, but it's just that extra wrinkle. But trying to work through things because everybody's got in their own mind, just like anything, you know, what, how it's supposed to be. And then what's not that way? Why is it not that way? And then do you look at yourself or do you try to communicate those issues or how do you deal with those challenges that when things aren't the way you think they should be? You know, I think that's where we were and we just kind of grew through it.
And you'd say each time you came back, you got a little bit better.
Well, you know, I think you can choose to get better or you can move farther away. And I think we chose to get better, you know. I think she chose to get better.
I really thought he was the one that really made all the difference, actually.
So as you just heard, sharing the credit might have something to do with it. But we also heard from Terry two perspectives here. Commitment, that long-term approach, and communication, the staying present and thinking in the short term. What I've gathered is that as a returning service member, you're going to learn along the way, but it's difficult and it takes work.
I would just say you just have to stay committed to it. Yeah. You have to stay committed to it because it's not going to be easy. Transition to being alone, and then coming back to a family is hard, you know, because things are changing. She's changed everything to be able to cope and to be able to get by. And then you come back and you automatically want to change it back the way you want it. And so there's that friction there. And so you just have to stay committed and you have to work through it. And you have to, you know, I think today there's too many people that want to, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about it this morning, but they'll commit to their brotherhood or to their unit or to the men that they fight with or next to, but they won't commit to sticking it out with their family and wives. And the same thing with it's just society. I think we just have to keep that commitment to the family first and foremost too. You know, it's just another commitment we have to keep, I think.
So there must be some kind of transference of skills that you can take from that one commitment.
I think so, but it's just those interactive human skills, you know, that you may or may not have, but you have to learn, and so you have to stay committed. Again, I think it's more than anything, it's just staying committed to doing it, to be in, and I think you have to be a good, I mean, you have to be able to say that's last month, last deployment, whatever it was, that's behind us, we're going to do better this time, and that's how I think you can keep it going, because grudges just, you know, in marriage never work, and especially when... You make mistakes on, you know, on reuniting or whatever the mistakes are.
And here's more from Megan on that subject.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that we'll see a lot of veterans commit to the process, you know, and I always tell people, if you want to get better, we have to do what's hardest, you know, and whenever we're preparing to make change, whether it's with our health or weight or things like that, it's never easy, right?
And it's going to probably feel like you're going backwards at times.
It's going to feel like you're going backwards at times, and it might look like you're going backwards at times, but it's sort of the walking through that darkness that we have to get to the other side. And so I see that commitment quite a bit. I also see, you know, in situations where we sometimes recommend maybe a veteran go to an inpatient or a residential program, that willingness of the family member to say that I will let go of you for this period of time so that you can go get better and I'll be right here when you get back. And I think that that is also kind of another sign of that commitment, you know, that we'll do whatever it takes. And I hear that quite a bit. Also, this is not, it's not pretty when trauma sort of left, you know, out of control within someone. And they're just trying to kind of manage it with what's in their environment. It's often very hurtful. It appears emotionally neglectful, can cause a host of other sort of social problems, like legal issues and that kind of thing. And I've seen a huge commitment in families, spouses, and parents who stick with their veteran through those dark times, you know, and, you know, I think that that's pretty remarkable as well.
So the question for me really arises of what that work looks like with kids. Megan has a story that really speaks to this being long-term work.
And so we work with veterans on just trying to find sort of safe ways at first that they can tolerate to kind of reconnect with children. For example, I had a veteran who had done 3 deployments. His son was newly born when he went on his last deployment to Afghanistan. He was a Marine. And when he got back, I mean, he didn't know his son and really had to kind of form that attachment, but couldn't because he was struggling so much, particularly with the events of that last deployment. So he was drinking very heavily and really struggling. And I started meeting with him about 5 years after that deployment, maybe 3 years after that deployment. And his son at that point was 3, and they were just really struggling. He was just either not present in his son's life, or if his son became kind of rambunctious, or, you know, just really overly angry and controlling with his son. And he didn't like the parent that he was becoming. And so what we talked about at first was, well, why don't we just start playing? But even play was too hard for the veteran at the time. What we know about trauma is it sort of zaps our ability to be creative, you know, and when we're really burdened by our trauma memories, it's really hard to be present with people. So we started just having him read to his son, and his son, he couldn't even tolerate his son being on his lap, so his son sat next to him, and we started there, and then we built on that, and then a few months later, he could have his son on his lap, and then, you know, eventually, they kind of worked on this gradually, and it took some time, and I think a lot of people, this takes a lot of time to heal from these traumas. They aren't one-time events. They're often very complex and multiple deployments and multiple exposures, and so healing also will take time. This didn't happen overnight, and so it took a while, but now he coaches his son's little league, you know, team. That's which great. Is really incredible, yeah. And he's gotten a lot better, but those incremental steps, as small as they may seem, were really important, and the veteran really felt like he was making some forward movement. It just took longer than I think anybody expected, you know, and so to really, I think you said it earlier, to kind of alter those expectations and to, with parenting, just finding those opportunities for connection. And I think so many family members can feel that way. What is wrong with me? Why am I not good enough? Why don't you love me anymore? We always, one of the first things we say to families is it's not about you. It really isn't about you. You're wonderful, you know, but it's just this thing has kind of put a wall between the two of you. But I think it can feel like that when you're in relationship with somebody who's dealing with complex trauma. I can feel that it is about you, that you aren't good enough or not lovable. And I think that that's something we really work to dispel.
So Megan has a book recommendation here written by a combat veteran, and it's called Why Is Dad So Mad? She told me she finds the book really helpful for building some language around this subject for kids in a developmentally appropriate way, and that kids of all ages have identified with this book. I'll be sure to include a link in the description of this episode if you want to check it out for yourself. Now, Delaine also told me a story about how this lifestyle can impact your kids. So maybe we can shift, talk about, a little bit about the kids. I don't know, how they take usually that transition back home, or what things did they bring to the table? I imagine having some joyful, bouncing little bundles around the house was pretty nice at times, but then also a little bit hectic at times.
Well, the second deployment was right after Christmas, or was it before Christmas? They were always before Christmas, I think.
From 9/11, you mean?
No,
that was like in
our son was 7 months old, and actually
first Gulf War.
I had gone to church, and I came home from church. He'd had to go to work. I came home from church, and there was a note saying, "I'm gone," and I burst into tears, and I was holding the baby, and he just looked at me, and he just had this, like he understood. And I just had to pull it together for him because I could tell that he was upset at me being upset. And so as hard as it was to be alone taking care of this child, in a way, I think it helped because I had this routine and I had this other person that kept me occupied and kept me kind of grounded. And he actually did get to come home and say goodbye before he left. But I will never forget that moment where you don't think a 7-month-old baby understands very much. But I could tell that he did. So they do. They understand a lot. But they're also very resilient and just incredibly resilient. And the amazing thing is that our two oldest went on to join the military.
That really speaks to me about that commitment, and you mentioned in your marriage, not just your marriage, but your family to the service. And
Yeah, because it is. It's a sacrifice for the kids, too, to have their dad gone.
Deployment, reentry, trauma, It can be very difficult on veterans and families, but if there was anything that I've learned in this conversation with both Terry and Delane and Megan, was there is a lot of hope and things do get better. If you can continue to build on your communication skills and do better each time, that commitment can really pay off. I want to let you hear some final words of advice from our guests, but before I do, I want to say something about safety. Sometimes it turns out that the best outcome is to part ways, and that is especially true if one partner feels unsafe, mistreated, or abused within the marriage. Making a partnership work is going to be difficult, but if it is unsafe, then there is no shame in walking away. If you do feel safe in your marriage and you want to make things work, that's where all of this advice applies. So with that, let's hear a few words of wisdom to take us to a conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I think we try to meet people where they're at, and we never want to force someone to open it up. But I always tell people, wherever you go, you will follow. You know, that we talk about it. I've had a lot of veterans over the years describe this as sort of like Pandora's box. And sometimes it takes a lot of effort to keep that box closed and shut tightly. And that energy and that effort could be used to other places in your life. You know, it could be used spending time with your kids or family. And I think one of the things about trauma is we want to avoid it. And so we will go out of our way to create an environment in which we can avoid it. But then the sacrifice is that you're missing out on opportunity for growth and development in your life. And so going back to what I said earlier about doing what's hardest, you know, that our job is to really help people unpack that box, and that you're not alone in doing that. And we would never leave you alone in doing that. And that it is possible to unpack that in a way that's not going to derail you or your family. And that at the end of the day, if you didn't have to lug this around all the time, you might have opportunity for growth in other ways that you can't imagine right now. Another thing too is a lot of veterans are very afraid to sort of let go of that past, you know, because it's a very sacred part of their life. And I always talk about you're never going to let go of it, right? It's always very important to you. It shaped you. These experiences have made you the person you are. But maybe they don't need to maybe do all the leading and walking and talking for you. They just need to be a part of you. And so we talk a lot about that, that it's just sort of changing the role maybe these experiences have in your life.
That's, I think, great. I hope that you often hear, you know, this feeling of lightness after mm-hmm. a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Getting some help with unpacking that box.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think we'll find that a lot of veterans, especially they move to Montana for the rural nature of Montana mm-hmm. and to kind of escape. And so we'll see a lot of people, and this addresses, you know, just with family members as well, we see a lot of people living in isolation. And one of the first tasks that we think is, you know, kind of very valuable in trauma work is really that developing those relationships to kind of help you through those times. And so we almost always encourage some sort of support network right away. And whether it be at first, it might just be with your therapist, and then maybe extending that to a group, or then maybe recreational opportunities or volunteer options, you know, in the community. And so we really know that people heal better from trauma when they have those relationships and that support. And I think a lot of people, when they come in, they don't want that. They want to isolate and they want to avoid. And I think being with other people who've maybe been through similar experiences, the thought is it's going to exacerbate my own problems, right? Or people won't understand what I've been through. And so we really try to dispel that myth, because what we know is that people do better when they are in relationships while they're working through this. And so relationships are very valuable to one's growth from trauma. And I always encourage spouses to stick with it, you know, that you can be a huge vehicle for change. And we've seen a lot of marriages deepen and grow through this experience of healing. And so their relationships are very valuable, even when maybe the person who's been impacted by trauma is not displaying that. Maybe they're very emotionally kind of vacant or not present, or pushing you away more directly through anger and that kind of thing. But you are very important. And I think a lot of spouses need to hear that, and partners need to hear that.
And let's hear from Terry and Delane again, who through more than 25 years of marriage, 20 years in the service, and a handful of deployments and 5 kids, have the benefit of a long-term perspective after many opportunities to correct mistakes and learn from one another. They're here to tell us that it can all be worth it.
Well, I think if I was going to speak to myself, you know, my 28 years ago self, I would say don't be afraid. you cannot let fear control you. And too many times my motivation was fear. I was afraid that my kids weren't going to turn out right. And so I was overly harsh in my parenting. You know, you just really need to be mindful of what is going on in your mind. And if it's fear, root it out, because you have to have faith. You have to have faith in each other. You have to have faith in your children that they're going to blossom and develop, and because they do in spite of you. Yeah, and I think probably the greatest thing that helped me along the way was friends who had older children who, when he was away and I didn't have him as a sounding board, would say, "Your kids are fine. Your kids are normal." Because I honestly did not know what to do with an 8-year-old boy that was bouncing off the walls. Yeah. He would really get upset when his dad was gone. The girls were more mellow, but our son, our oldest, really struggled. And so those times were really hard for the two of us when dad was gone. But they got better once I got beyond that fear of, what do I do with this child? And right. Is he going to be okay? And just had some faith that, yeah, he was just a normal kid. And
I try to put the quotes around normal, you know. What's normal these days or ever before? And who knows what kind of value your kids could pull into their lives from that experience that so many other kids growing up without ever moving anywhere.
True. That's a good point. The way you look at things is so important.
Sure.
Just like, the only thing I would say to end this would be that I appreciate what Delaney says and everything a lot, and that I think we always, as a spouse, as a father, anybody, you have to give always the person that you are with or that you are working, you know, your relationship, give them the benefit of the doubt more than not. And that's what I've kind of learned through her, is that you have to be that way. And that goes with forgiveness and everything else. Give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, you don't know somebody's heart. You don't know their intentions. And right. Always assume that they're good. Makes a difference.
I have one last thing, too.
Please share.
The rewards don't come for a long time. They don't. You know, I just... Little ones, yes. Sure. But I don't really remember being thanked for being their mom until after they left home. So that's when they start writing these sweet letters and thanking you for the times that you were mean. But they do come. They do come. You just have to have faith that it's worth it. It's so worth it.
I've never regretted staying married, I'll tell you that. But I think I would regret it. I guess my point is I would regret it if I did give up.
It's not just like 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 1 = way more than 2. It's just, there's days that it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, sure.
But hang in there.
Not for me.
Because
I've never had those days.
You just have to hang in there.
I'm just glad she hung in there long enough.
Well, I just want to say thank you again to Megan Lee Moriarty and the Missoula Vet Center for sharing your clinical expertise with me. And thank you for all your hard work, Megan, for what you do working with veterans and their families. Megan told me that at the vet centers, they work to see veterans within 24 hours of them calling in. So if you're listening as a vet right now and you've been thinking about seeking some support, I would encourage you that now is the right time. I can't say thank you enough to Terry and Delaine. First, thank you both for your service. Second, thank you for sitting down with me and sharing your story. I really hope that in doing so, you are helping even one couple going through the struggles of reintegration. It was inspiring to me to see two people committed to each other and their family who were quick to give credit and encourage each other. Thank you for joining me on the Montana Minute. Please tell me what you think about this episode in the comments or review the podcast on iTunes. That will help us get this information out to an even wider audience. Please take care of yourself, and I'll see you next time.